Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Good day. This is Carrie Weber. I am executive editor of America Magazine, and you are listening to our Smart Catholic Take on Faith and Culture.
And I'm Sam Sawyer. So each week we offer news and analysis from the intersection of the church and the world gathered by the team at America Magazine.
And Father Matt Malone is not with us, as you may guess. He's out this week, but I am back.
Welcome back, Carrie.
Thank
it's wonderful
you very much.
To have you.
You may or may not have missed me, but either way, I'm here. And I'm happy to be here and chatting today with Jim Keen, one of our senior editors at America.
Thank you, Carrie. Thank you, Sam.
That's very formal. You're welcome. We're glad to have you. And so we have someone here to talk to us about a wonderful teacher who is someone that, as I mentioned, maybe some people in the church aren't really aware of, but should be. And here to tell us why is Father Patrick Ryan, who's a Jesuit and the Lawrence J. McGinley Professor of Religion and Society at Fordham, as I said. And he wrote an article for us at America Magazine called The Model of a Catholic Teacher, Cardinal Avery Dulles. Father Patrick Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, as I mentioned, for folks who are not familiar with Cardinal Dulles, tell us a little bit about him.
Avery Dulles was the son of the man who eventually became the Secretary of State under Dwight Eisenhower, but his family went back in the American history to the 18th century. They came from Ireland, where they were Protestant Scots settlers in Limerick. The name originally was Douglas, but they became Dulles in the pronunciation. Of course, the G is often aspirated in Irish. And so they came to the United States in the 18th century, and three members of the family, the descent group, were secretaries of state for various presidents in the 19th and two in the 20th century. And the last was John Foster Dulles, who was Secretary of State for most of the time that Dwight Eisenhower was president. But Avery Dulles himself was a formidable intellect, and he was especially after his sophomore year, from his sophomore year on in college at Harvard College, when he became a serious student. He was an okay student before that, but he became serious after his sophomore year.
He would have been all right to get into Harvard, probably.
Yeah.
He couldn't have done too poorly for himself.
Yeah. Well, but he had gone to Choate. He had a good education in Choate.
And so this would have been his 100th birthday this year, right?
Yes.
He's someone you knew personally, right?
Well, he taught me all the time I was in theology at Woodstock in the late 60s. And we became, middle 60s, I suppose, we became very good friends. And he also was famous for his sense of humor. And I mentioned in the article that just before my ordination, I wrote an article called Why I Want to Be a Priest, which America published. And there was a misprint that came into it. It said...
I can't imagine that happening with us.
That was before the current administration. The word not dropped out of a sentence. And it said, instead of saying, I do not feel cheated by the largely seminary education I had, it said, I do feel cheated by the man.
Right. That's a different
message. That's quite different, especially since it was being published the week I was being ordained. And I had just left Woodstock. So I asked the editor of America at the time to send a note to Woodstock. The mails worked at that time. And they so explained on the bulletin board that it was a misprint of what it should have said. And they also corrected it in a later edition. But... Avery arrived up for the ordination. Of course, he had seen the note, but he couldn't resist. He gave me a copy of a book that I had proofread for him, and it said, to Pat Ryan, S.J., on the occasion of his ordination, priestly ordination, and in memory of his seminary education.
I've actually also got a wonderful story about Avery's sense of humor. So when I was a Jesuit novice, I was... briefly, while I was on a hospital experiment, so working at Calvary Hospital in the Bronx, living at Spelman Hall in Fordham, where Cardinal Dulles lived, and he was not in the community at the time because Pope John Paul II had just died, and so he had gone over to Rome for the funeral, mm-hmm. and then to join. He was too old to vote in the conclave that elected Benedict. But he was participating in the meetings before and after, and for Benedict's inaugural mass as Pope. And he got back from all that and walked back into the community while we were all at dinner. And I think just because people were sort of, no one knew what to do with a Jesuit cardinal who had just come back from the installation of a pope. So we all stood up and applauded. Seemed kind of ridiculous. And
I kind of love that scene.
And Avery sort of cocked an eyebrow and wryly and very dryly said, well, maybe next time. Which turned out to be prophetic, since we did in fact elect a Jesuit pope the next time.
Oh, that is great. Yeah, yeah. So in addition to making a number of very witty remarks, he wrote 23 books.
Yes, right.
So that he was quite the prolific author, including Models of the Church, which is a real kind of monumental work.
It is. It's unusual work in that he's taking certain things from a type of philosophical thought that looks at reality from various models, rather than to just try to analyze it philosophically and sort of outline the elements of it. So he in the book he has five originally, and then finally six in the second edition of the book, Models of the Church, ways of looking at the church as the bride of Christ, as a servant of the world, and so forth and so on. So he has various ways of looking at the church in the book. He also did that when the book on Revelation, which is a harder read, but he also looks at Revelation that way. And he's extraordinary as an ability to penetrate that idea, those ideas. He was especially affected by certain type of scientific thoughts, especially philosophical scientific thought. And he was particularly interested in the ideas of European philosophers who took all the sciences seriously, and the way they do in the universities, especially in Germany, where theological faculties and philosophical faculties and hard science faculties are all together, and appreciate each other's lives as intellect. One of the things that we have in America is a religion is mainly studied at universities that have a religious tradition, but the secular universities are sometimes uncomfortable, and even more so on the lower level in high schools and undergraduate colleges, where people are uncomfortable with the discussion of religious questions, except as purely historical issues, like the history of art.
Mm-hmm. Right. How do you think the models of the church shaped how we view how the church actually sort of works in the world?
Well, I think it enables us to see that the church is multifaceted, that it can fail sometimes in its mission, but it's not exhausted by any one model of the church. It's not simply a hierarchy descending from on high, from the Pope through the bishops, the clergy, and so forth, but it's also a circle of people around Christ himself. And that's one of the most important things. And he was affected by the Second Vatican Council. He was not an advisor at the Second Vatican Council. But one of his early books was called Dimensions of the Church. And it basically sums up what is important in each of the major documents of the Second Vatican Council. And that was one of the books I proofread for him. And he said in the front of that one, he said to Pat Ryan, who was responsible for any errors that still exist in the text.
Well, I can attest that at least as recently as 5 years ago, when I was in theology studies, in my seminary education, which I also do not feel cheated by, that Models of the Church was still being routinely assigned as, and the text in any class on ecclesiology, on the study of the theology of the church.
That's real staying power.
Yeah. But what I think was most striking about it was, in theology grad school, as in most graduate programs that I'm aware of, graduate students are quite often far more opinionated than they have warrant to be, right? and a lot of the work of grad school is sort of sanding the edges off those opinions, or at least teaching people to know how well-founded they aren't before they go out and assert them globally. But one of the things I experienced myself, and I saw in my classmates and my colleagues who were reading Models of the Church, was that it was a really wonderful experience to see a first-rate mind taking different arguments seriously and saying, you can make this argument in these conditions and in this way, but you can also make this argument. And even when they don't overlap completely, or you can't, you know, get them to come to a single summation, there are still valid arguments going on here, and we need to take them all seriously.
Right, and I think, you know, Sam, one of the Cardinal Dulles was Father Ryan's predecessor as the Lawrence McGinley Chair at Fordham, and one of the things he became known for over the course of that was kind of as the great synthesizer of different thought in theology, which gained him audiences all across the spectrum from very traditionalist to very progressive Catholics as well.
And also he was willing to speak in dialogue with serious Lutheran theologians and also with those who come from the more evangelical traditions in the United States. So he was involved in that type of dialogue. The interesting thing about the book Models of the Church, many people seem to think, well, I like this model of the church, mm. or like that. And the whole point of model thought is that all the models are valid.
Yes.
And it's only by looking at all of them that you get a balanced view of the church. And that was also true of the models of Revelation. And also he had models of faith, which he has the second half of his book, The Assurance of Things Hoped For. All of the models are valid. They're not, no one of them is exhaustive, but all of them are valid. And I think it's important to realize that, because otherwise people say, well, I'm for a servant church. Well, you also have to have other models of the church as well.
Right. As if it's some kind of fast food menu and you yeah. only get to order one extra yeah. value meal.
Right. Yeah, well, there's always that temptation to make the church in our image, right? And to make God in our image. And this kind of helps move us away from that, to say, well, this is good, but here's another good, and here's another good, and all the goods should be working together toward a greater good.
Avery was a person of tremendous intellectual interest. As an undergraduate, he majored in one of those programs they have at Harvard, which are very interesting, history and literature. And he did Renaissance history and literature because he knew Italian and French and Latin and Greek. And so he's very interested.
Came
in,
from a different era of education.
Yeah. He was as a result, he was able get himself. He was interested in what was the background of the Renaissance, and then he realized how much of it was the development of the scholastic tradition, and so that's when he was introduced into the thought of the medievals and he became fascinated with it. Eventually, his first book is actually his senior thesis at Harvard. Harvard at that time used to publish senior theses, and it was the Phi Beta Kappa Award of the Year. It's about Giovanni Pico della Mirandola, who was a great multifaceted Renaissance Italian thinker, and who was interested in everything. He was interested in what was known as the natural sciences, philosophy, theology, even Kabbalah from the Jewish tradition. So he... That sort of broadened his vision of the world, I think, very much, and he finally he realized that the somewhat narrower science centered orientation. When he finished secondary school at Choate, he varied whether he said he was an agnostic or an atheist at the time, but he had certainly wandered far from the Presbyterianism of his parents. Avery, as I said, in his sophomore year, he got into that. Renaissance history and literature major at Harvard. And one day in his junior year, he realized as he was studying especially some of the medieval sources of Renaissance thought, he was tired. He was in the Widener Library and decided to go for a walk on a February afternoon along the Charles. And one of the trees growing along the Charles, he stopped to examine it. It was starting to blossom. And he started looking at the little tender buds coming out. And he said he realized that they were following a law which he did not know in his own life. And he said that night, for the first time since he was a boy, he prayed. And that was the beginning of the journey in his junior year. He was gradually instructed through the faith, in the Catholic faith. And in his, he graduated in 1940, but he was formally received into the church in the fall of 1940 when he was a first semester law student at the Harvard Law School.
There's a real moment of humility in that realization. That's really an interesting way into the faith.
Yes, it was. I'm sure it's interesting. His sister Lilius became was ordained as a Presbyterian. At least she was a lay reader. I think she may have been actually ordained a minister finally, but the rest of the family remained fairly religious. But he said he himself had become alienated from it for various reasons. in his freshman year of college, he and two of his wayward freshman friends were sitting in the Bickford's cafeteria on the Harvard or Massachusetts Avenue. And they saw a taxi driver come in and leave the keys in his ignition while he was coming in to get some fast food and run out. And they walked out and stepped into the cab and stole it. And they drove it into Boston and they were arrested and spent the weekend in jail. The other two were expelled. They were not doing very well in there academically, but Avery was given a very, very stern warning and that he was never to steal taxis again. And his father wasn't around at the time, but his uncle Alan was, and Alan was brought up to look into Avery's case.
I imagine he probably didn't steal any taxis after that, right?
No, I think as far as I know, he stayed away.
Not until his later years.
He looked sometimes longingly at the wheel, but he was the worst driver, by the way, I've ever
He was
him.
Terrible. He was an awful driver.
He was famously, he had this old battered up car and it broke down. He always would try to avoid the tolls on bridges, so he went through the bridges that connect Manhattan and the Bronx without tolls.
Yeah.
And the car broke down about 1 in the morning. And he sat there while other people were going around trying to find somebody to repair the car. He stood there with one of the other Jesuits discussing the theological issue they've been on before.
When I was a student at Fordham, he was somewhat infamous for still attempting to drive off campus and causing people to leap out of the way right and left.
Finally, his superior forbade him to drive anymore. He ground his teeth a few times on the subject. Sister Anne-Marie Kermsey, his longtime research associate at Fordham, for the 20 years he had the McGinley chair, she often turned out to be the driver in need when he had to get places.
Could you say a little bit about how he came to his Jesuit vocation? Did he meet the Jesuits at Harvard when he was entering the church, or did that happen later?
He met Jesuits who were graduate students at Harvard at that time. And some of them are people who eventually taught at various Jesuit colleges and universities. But one of them was his instructor. But he just, he first of all was becoming a Catholic. Then I think realized as the time was going on, he wanted to enter the Jesuits right after his conversion. But the Second World War broke out. And we have a rule in the society about people who have newly converted either from another form of Christianity or from another faith have to wait 3 years, lest they confuse the enthusiasm, the consolation of conversion with the consolation of a vocation.
Very so, wise.
That yes, seems reasonable.
Yeah, it was, yeah. But anyway, he had to put it off for a few years, but then the war broke out, so he got a commission in the Navy. And so he was... some of his stories from the Navy are very interesting. He got the Croix de Guerre from the French because he was French-speaking, so he could... Some of the Free French had taken their ships out of... and were in the Mediterranean, and he went on to one of the French ships. But he also tells about when they're in the Caribbean. He said, we spent the entire night shelling what we thought was a submarine, and when the dawn came up, we realized it was a rock.
Oh, my gosh.
But he... at the end of the war, the war had ended in Europe and hadn't ended in Asia yet. So at the end of the war in Europe, he was stationed in Naples. And there he and several of his fellow Navy people in Naples came down with poliomyelitis. So he thought that was going to be the end of his entering the Jesuits. Mm-hmm. So he went back to Washington, and he was in a health facility in Washington there run by the Navy, I suppose the Naval Medical Center. And there he went through a lot of therapy. And he came back, he still had to do therapy, but he did it as an outpatient from the Naval Medical, Naval base in Boston, because he didn't want to apply to the Society of Jesus from such and such a ward in the hospital. It looked too bad. So he had a loping walk all his life, and he looked, as one person described him in the poem, like a hangers-on on a sort of a hat rack.
That's John LaRue?
John LaRue, yes, yes. Yeah.
He was fairly sort of
He was over 6 feet tall, and he weighed about 130 pounds.
Yeah.
And when Sister Anne-Marie said when he was getting honorary degrees, they'd ask for his dimensions for the academic robe. They said, there must be some mistake here. And she'd say back, no, there's no mistake. He is 6 foot two, and he is 130 pounds. So... But he, that was partly from the polio. But he was, the family generally tended to be rather thin. His older brother lived longer than Avery, but he died about 6 months before Avery. His older brother was a university professor in the University of Texas to the end of his life. And he didn't come to the installation of Avery as a cardinal in Rome. He said, not for any prejudice or anything. He just said, I have class that day. And Avery thought that was perfectly sensible.
And he would. Actually, speaking of class, because, I mean, the headline on the article that you wrote for that is in America now and available at americamagazine.org/serious is the model of a Catholic teacher. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about your experience as his student, what he was like in the classroom, because certainly the stories that have come to me about him in the classroom have a certain character.
Well, he himself used the phrase used about his father, dull, duller, dullest. And he had no techniques at all. He simply stood at the podium. His with one hand, he would just pull out his, as if he had a beard, but he had no beard. He'd pull out it. He'd pull out his flesh from his face. And he would make gestures, as I said, in the general direction of hell. And then he'd write a word or two on the board. And he droned. But it was the content was everything. I just recently met somebody else who had had him as a teacher and said the same thing. You just were just mesmerized. If you were theologically serious, you were mesmerized by the content. But at one time, somebody asked a question. I said, is it possible that in the life to come, we could still be on a learning curve about God? And he said, yes, he said, I think since we're finite, we would still be learning. And somebody in the classroom just sighed.
Now, you mentioned that he dealt with polio. The after effects came back to
the last two or three years of his life. Suddenly, we noticed that his first of all, a couple of falls he took on the campus. But then about a year and a half before he died, I had been away in Africa during the summer. When I came back, his speech was slurred. And I thought, was he having a stroke? But what it was is the beginning of the return of the secondary effects of polio. Finally, he was almost like somebody with ALS. He, at the end of his life, he could only move his eyes. Oh. And he had to, with an alphabet board, indicate what he was wanted to say.
Well, and that's actually how he wrote his final speech, right?
Yeah, yes.
One of the most moving things I've really ever seen at a lecture is at Avery's last lecture at Fordham in 2008, he went to bless the audience and needed to use his left hand to raise his right arm to give the blessing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. It seems like there's a tremendous amount, again, of that humility there in his ability to still live out his ministry in a really powerful way. And not, I think it would be very easy for someone to kind of take these physical limitations and then just say, you know, they wanted to end that kind of ministry, end their time in the public, and, you know, sit in the room, pray, feel sorry for yourself, whatever. And it sounds, you write in the article that he says, as I became increasingly paralyzed and unable to speak, he was able to identify with the many paralytic and mute persons in the gospel. So it not only was he approached us with humility, it brought him closer to God.
It did, and it was extraordinary to see the rector, who was the rector in one of his last years as almost his last years as McGinley professor, predeceased him of cancer. I remember Avery being wheeled over to the university church to attend the funeral, and he was sitting in a wheelchair and fairly helpless. But the president of the university was celebrating the university, and he asked me to take a stole over to Avery and put it around his shoulders so they could receive communion with the stole on. And to bring him communion, it was extraordinary. This man who had taught me so much and had so much effect on my life now, and so totally helpless, I had to give him communion on the tongue because he couldn't put up his hands to receive it.
Hmm. It's really beautiful. You write that he also wrote, I know well that God's power can be made perfect in infirmity, that even in these weaknesses, even in these challenges, there's God.
He died on December 12th, and one of the things I was informed that week, I was then the vice president for university mission and ministry, and they said, you're the master of ceremonies at the various masses. And I said, the what? I'm not famous for my ability to do these things. So I asked the director of campus ministry to just stand next to me and tell me what to do next. But finally, at the last funeral was down, the actual funeral was in the cathedral. And it was a cold December day. But I had to walk down. There were several masters of ceremonies there. I was only the third assistant the master of ceremonies. But I was walking down, trying to keep my hands together, looking pious. And in a newly bought black cassock I had gotten for the occasion, I still have it in the closet someplace. And as I was walking down, they opened up the doors of St. Patrick's Cathedral, and there was the statue of Atlas in Rockefeller Center. I said, what a contrast, this muscular Atlas, symbol of Radio City of America, and then this humble man finally going to his eternal reward. But he was a very moving event, funeral mass.
Well, before we go, we should mention that on September 24th, Fordham is hosting an event to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the birth of Cardinal Avery Dulles. And information about that is available at americanmagazine.org/Sirius if you want to find out more about that.
So thank you so much, Father Patrick Ryan. We really appreciate your being here with us. We appreciate your wonderful article. If you want to read it, The Model of a Catholic Teacher, Cardinal Avery Dulles, is available, as Father Sam Sawyer said, at americamagazine.org/Sirius. And you can subscribe to America at 1-800-627-9533. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, etc. Thanks very much for joining us today. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.